Hello and welcome to Future Projection. This is episode 185 of the show. I'm Carlos Glazo, joined by Ben Badler. How you doing, Ben?
I'm good, Carlos. We got a new top 100 up on the site.
Yeah, we do.
We get some graduations. Goodbye to Kevin McGonigal. Goodbye.
Bye forever. He's no longer a prospect. We'll never talk about him again on this podcast. So
I imagine, only 19 seconds into the episode today. not goodbye yet to Connor Griffin, still technically a prospect, at which point,
I was on Twitter, and I guess they do this new like AI generated headline / trending thing for you on the side, and the Connor Griffin news was Connor Griffin skyrockets to number one on Baseball America's top 100. And I was like,
at Grok, is this true?
He currently is the top prospect, but skyrocket maybe is not the way I would describe it. Mostly still hasn't graduated yet, so retains his status as the top prospect. But yeah, first significant in-season update for us on the top 100 side. We're going to talk about that list, some of the notable players today, but there's also a lot of other good content on the site at baseballamerica.com to help you guys kind of see who's moving up, who's moving down. We've got updated notes on all the top players. And I do feel like, Ben, my kind of takeaway from this top 100 was that it really feels like this is the time of the year where people are like, man, we really need the draft guys to become eligible so we can get some reinforcements to this list. Do you feel the same? Do you feel like it's in need of some help as we work down the top 100, or you think it's still pretty strong throughout?
No, I don't think so. There's guys even who are off the list who I wish we had on at the back and that I think we'll probably get on at some point in the near future.
Ben Badler likes players. He likes to like guys. That's good.
Yeah, sue me. Like the graduations at the top so hurt the very top of the list, so you don't have... Mm-hmm. Again, like the McGonagalls, the Weatherholts, these guys that are doing it in the big leagues now, for the most part, right? Like, you know, Connor Griffin is still technically eligible. Same with Peyton Tolley, Trey Savage, Carson Benge for now, but those guys will graduate too. Yeah, I think come June, that's when you start to feel it a little bit more, where it's like, feels like there should be a little bit more here, but no, I still think it's a strong group.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of players to like. There are a lot of fun players who kind of jumped on the back of the list as well, who are interesting. But I'm not sure if there's a singular takeaway or a single player or group of players that you feel like are most interesting to talk about and lead this conversation with. But I'm happy to kind of go wherever you want to go.
Yeah, I feel like we've talked a lot already about, you know, like some of the guys from last year's draft, especially the pitching at the top that's moving up, like Kate Anderson, Seth Hernandez,
top 10 prospects now. Crazy to see Seth Hernandez as a top 10 prospect. Not actually, but it's just funny to me. That one will always be funny to me.
Yeah, seeing those guys just dominating right now. I think it's also interesting just to see, because, you know, those guys signed last year, obviously, but they didn't really, you know, they didn't throw after signing, at least not in any official games, because they're pitchers. That's just typically what teams do with their arms that they draft. They shut them down.
Right.
But we did see, so Ethan Holliday is in our top 100.
He is.
Tate Southesine is not in our top 100, but those are two guys, and you could throw Kaysen Cunningham, also Diamondbacks first round pick, into this mix too of guys who went out last year, high school draft picks, who went to low A and struggled there. I mean, I would say especially Tate Southesine, we talked about a little bit, I think it was on one of the last week's shows where, man, I liked Tate Southesine coming out of the draft.
Right.
And then he went out and it was just brutal. I mean, he wasn't drawing any walks. He was swinging at everything. He was swinging and missing at everything. He was still showing raw power on the occasional ball that he put into play, but overall
ground ball power. Yeah.
I was like, oh man, I was way off on this one.
Right.
And now
Well, I wasn't quite as high as you pre-draft, but even after post-draft, he was a guy who I kind of assumed, I'd say going into the process for the handbook for the Braves, I did the Braves chapter, and going into that, I was like, well, Tate Southesine, top 100 prospect pre-draft, first round pick, like he's going to be in their top 10, right? And then like doing the work on kind of writing up Tate Southesine and talking to people inside and outside of the Braves system who saw him, it was like, it was hard to justify putting him that high because of how bad the struggles were. And now I'm looking at what he's doing this year and being like, should I still have had him in that top 10 range? Like, how much should we have factored in, like, what we saw from his debut? Because one of the things that I feel like is tricky is there's real information you can gather from these pro debuts, but I also don't really feel like pro baseball is set up in an ideal way for high school players to enter pro ball after signing and be at a level that makes sense, both for, like, being challenging enough and also not having them just like completely over their heads in terms of like who they're seeing. The kind of unofficial bridge league games don't really do much for me in terms of like our ability to evaluate that. Like maybe you get a good call from someone who is watching them and you can feel good about the information that you're getting. But in terms of like the performance and the batted ball data and the pitch data that we're getting from high school players in particular, pro ball, how are you kind of handling how we use that, how we evaluate that? Because I think you need to react to new information as you get it, but it's very tricky to kind of thread the needle where you're not overreacting or underreacting. I don't know if there's a perfect answer to that.
Yeah, well, that's where I look at, you know, guys like Ethan Cunningham, or excuse me, I'm combining them into one player.
Man, Ethan Holliday plus Cason Cunningham would be a pretty elite prospect, right?
Depends which way you combine them, I guess. But Ethan Holliday went out, really liked Ethan Holliday before the draft, knew there was going to be some swing and miss in there that came with the power, came with the walks, but it was a 39% strikeout rate last year.
Right.
Cason Cunningham, really advanced, pure hitter. He went out and hit 255, 308, mm-hmm. 277. Last year, you know, not a huge sample size, 52 plate appearances, but I think especially Holliday and Southesine's, where you're seeing that much swing and miss, mm-hmm. was more concerning. We still had obviously Ethan Holliday in our top 100 coming into the year, and now, yeah, all three of those guys look mm-hmm. really good right now. They're still, you know, Cason Cunningham is not a big power guy. I don't think that's ever going to be part of mm-hmm. his game. There's just not like the bat speed or physicality there for that, I don't think, but he's very advanced, very polished hitter. And Ethan Holliday, yeah, there's going to be some swing and miss that comes with the power, but he's got big power. He's drawing walks, like him and Xavier Nyans, Astros first round pick. I think Xavier Nyans is an even mm-hmm. more patient hitter than Ethan Holliday is, but there's some similarities there
yep.
to the two of them, where it's big raw power from the left side. I like Ethan Holliday's swing generally, even though it does come with swing and miss, a lot of bat speed. So mm-hmm. yeah, I think ever since MLB shrank the minor leagues and really took away the complex league for draft picks,
yeah,
right? Because look, like the ACL and the FCL is still going on right now, but it's primarily for Latin American players or draft picks from, you know, 2025 draft picks who are playing in it right now, who are just, you know, basically just not good enough or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
Teams don't think are ready to go to low mm-hmm. A already. Right. Whereas before, you could have guys go out, and there were definitely cases where a guy went out and it either looked great or looked really bad after signing, especially for a hitter in mm-hmm. one of those rookie ball levels. And I think there was a lot of signal right. to that. Like you're used to your most recent evaluation for a lot of high school players is seeing them face high school pitching,
right?
Probably against a lot of players who are not going to be playing even college baseball, swinging metal bats. Now you're getting them And look, so what are the, and then some of them are playing what, maybe depending on what part of the country you're in, 25 games, 30, 40 games in a high school season.
Yeah.
You could get 30 games in a, you know, what was a Gulf Coast League or Arizona League season. So there was, there could get a lot of valuable information from that, just from the environment. But now when you're pushing these guys straight to low A, and, you know, whether it's good for their development or bad, I don't know. I'm more concerned about my ability to, or our ability selfishly, just analyze and evaluate and project.
And I think for
pitchers, it makes it a lot more challenging.
For pitchers, I could see a case where, especially college pitchers, like maybe it makes some sense after you sign to just shut down. You don't want to like be throwing the entire year. Like that makes sense. But I think for hitters in particular, especially you're talking about high school players who, the competition that you're facing during the spring is massively variable. Most of it is not that great, unless you're talking about the very best high school leagues and in kind of your typical hotbed areas of the country. I do think for hitters, like a lot of development is just getting a lot of reps against quality pitching. And if there's not an appropriate level to put you, and then you're in a situation where you're just not playing as many games after you sign, I just think that's like time where a lot of really important development happens on top of what you said, like our ability to feel comfortable evaluating the players because they're in a competitive environment that makes sense. And I'm sure our listeners don't want to hear me complain about this anymore because I feel like I lament it a lot, but it is just disappointing, I guess, that we seem to be moving to a minor league system that just increasingly is indifferent to high school players' development ability. So I don't know. I don't know how much more I can say other than I wish it was not the case. And I guess maybe that means we have to be extra eyes open for all these high school players when they're getting their first full pro seasons. Because I think it's
important to just to understand the context where you're evaluating these players. It's not the same as it was in 2019 when you're seeing a high school player make his pro debut in Florida or Arizona. So it's like, and it can cut two ways, right? It's even more impressive when the Yankees draft Dax Kilby, high school shortstop, send him out to low A, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, actually this guy's even better than we thought. He's making a ton of contact, good. I mean, look, a lot of the things you liked about him before, but to then go out and do it against a lot of, you know, college arms of older competition, more advanced competition at that level. And we say he's top 100 prospect now. He's a back of the first round guy, and it was questionable whether he was even going to go into the first round heading into the draft. So we've boosted him way up our
list.
Dax Kilby with the Yankees.
Yeah. Yep.
But at the same time, hey, let's also not overreact to, okay, yeah, a guy like Ethan Holliday, you know, has a high swing and miss rate. You know, that's certainly a red flag to monitor, but also let's give it a little bit more time. And you look at him now and it's like, this is more or less what I think if you were the Rockies, what you were expecting or what you were hoping to see from him.
Yeah. The miss has not been as extreme as it was last year. I mean, again, we think that Ethan Holliday probably is going to always have this component of his game, but it is a lot more encouraging when you're seeing him get to his power with more frequency, and he walked last year. Like it didn't ever seem like the swing decisions or the chase rate was concerning, even when he was striking out a lot. But I think the one that is even more dramatic is Southesine, and I'm not sure where you view him as a prospect now. If you think he's a guy who is kind of on the fringe of the top 100, or will be there if he continues to perform, but he feels like he's had and I don't even know if it was just purely like his debut was the blip that you can kind of disregard, but his swing decisions and approach at the plate have made a dramatic shift, kind of like we were talking about with Seaver King. I don't know if it was our last main episode or two previous episodes, but my biggest concern for him after his debut was just like, are the swing decisions just far worse than we expected them to be before the draft? Because how frequently he was swinging, I think it was over half the time, he was expanding the zone a lot. And to me, those were the biggest questions, more than the miss that he was showing, because I just felt like that was not a sustainable approach. And he is swinging dramatically less frequently, so far this year. His chase rates are significantly improved. Like both of those are like really good numbers right now. It just feels like he is a dramatically different hitter. And so I guess my question to you would be like, is this the player that you thought he was going to be pre-draft, or do you think he's made a jump from the player you thought he was going to be pre-draft?
I think this is more or less what I was thinking or hoping he would be coming into the draft, is a guy who, all right, it's like a bigger moves to his swing, probably will come with some swing and miss, but I thought he was a good hitter who had power. And now he's showing what I'm sure the Braves were not like thrilled after they picked him and he went out and performed the way he did last year. But now, yeah, I think it looks more or less like what you were expecting him to be when you drafted him.
I mean, I think it's just significantly better across the board. He's hitting fewer of his balls on the ground. The infield fly ball rate is down dramatically. He's making better swing decisions. He's maintaining the impact that he showed a year ago, which the impact was kind of the saving grace. I think you could point to and say, hey, like this is a really strong trait that he's showing. The power numbers he was showing as a high schooler were like some of the most impressive of any of the 25 draftees we got to see.
And with ground ball stuff too, it's not always, oh, it's just a matter of swing plane needs to elevate more. If your timing is off, you're just going to roll over a lot of ground balls. You're just going to hit a lot of weak contact and it's going to end up that way. So it's not even necessarily a question of can he make a swing plane adjustment. Sometimes it's just getting your timing right.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes it can snowball too, where you're really struggling and then you start pressing and you're purely like, okay, I've got to make contact. I've struck out so much, I've swung and missed. And so like you'll be making far worse actual swings just to try and bail out for some contact. And just across the board, he's been really impressive. I think he's still splitting a little bit of splitting reps at shortstop. He's mostly been playing second base full time. I believe Alex Lodice is getting the bulk of the shortstop reps there for that Augusta team. But I think Tate Southesian is going to wind up at somewhere up the middle, whether that's second base, shortstop. I'd be intrigued to see what he looked like in center field. I don't know if you got a chance to see him much in center field as a high schooler, but I think he does have the speed and the athleticism to capably handle one of those three positions.
A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the U.S. has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the US just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.
Do you know who's also been significantly improved and is definitely going to stay somewhere in the middle of the field? In fact, at one specific position in the middle of the field.
Oh, is this the time where Ben can take his celebration tour about Ethan Salas? Feels like it might be.
In fairness, I said last year my position on Ethan Salas.
Oh, you should. You should absolutely pound the drum.
Roll back the tape, because my position was, I don't know what to make of Ethan Salas, right? I mean, I know what to make of him defensively, but
I think even that is not giving yourself the credit you should get, because
a lot
of us were really skeptical of Ethan Salas, and we were ready to we did penalize him more on the top 100, I think, than you would have liked to see, Ben, and you consistently
came
back to say
75 before this update, so he's in the top 100,
right? And I know myself included, I'll just speak for myself. I thought at certain points that he wasn't a top 100 prospect, which now seems utterly foolish. It's a good reminder to just follow along with Ben on his thoughts on players. But yeah, Ethan Salas has been tremendous. So what can we learn about what Salas has done, or his arc, or just the value of staying patient with players?
Well, he's Look, I think we both agree on his defense, right? He's he's 19 years old in double A, and if they sent him up just to catch in the big leagues tomorrow, he would not only would not look out of place, he'd probably be already one of the better defensive catchers in baseball. Maybe that's, I don't know, maybe that's a rich statement to make, but he's very polished for his age.
He has the potential to be one of the very best defenders in the big leagues, whether that's today or a few years from now.
Yeah, the receiving, the blocking, the throwing, all the intangibles. I don't know how he's going to do on the ABS challenge system. I guess that's the only thing we need to see from him to check off on the catcher defense checklist. But
yeah,
everything that you want to see from him defensively is there and has been there ever since, or even probably before he signed. And there's very little disagreement, if any disagreement, on that. I thought just last year or coming into the season, it was tough because I would hear people would say things like, oh, well, he at some point he's got a hit, right? And it's like, well, it's not that he struggled last year. He just didn't play.
Right.
He played 10 games. It wasn't like a great 10 games, but he was in double A and he got hurt. So basically just washed out that season. And okay, like the year,
mostly the 24 season, I feel like, for me, more than
the 24 season, he struggled. Yes. But it was as what, an 18 year old?
It was an 18 year old in high A and probably a young 18 year old.
And the year before, he was a 17 year old who hit 267, 350, 487 in low A in 48 games. So, like, we have seen him perform.
Right.
The swing is there. The swing is good. He's always made a lot of contact. And now watching
him
play,
the power jump, it feels like.
Yes. The power has jumped
significantly. Yeah.
The swing looks great. The contact is still there. That's the thing. He's not all of a sudden selling out with his swing, getting long, trying to.
As we record this, he's hitting 321, 409, 580 in 24 games in double A with a 22.6% strikeout rate, 12.9% walk rate. He already has 5 home runs. His previous high in a single season was 9 in 66 games in 2023. This is the career high in all the extra base hit damage sort of performance statistics, isolated slugging percentage. And the exit velocity is up dramatically. So,
yeah. And just also for context, we were just talking about Ethan Holliday, Tate Salathisene, and how they're off to good starts in low A. Had Ethan Salas stayed in the United States, had he stayed in Florida and gone through the draft process, he would have been a 2025 high school draft pick. So
imagine a first rounder from last year's draft out of high school being pushed to double A and doing this, how we'd be talking about him would be significantly different. Yeah.
Yeah. He's born the same month and year as Seth Hernandez. And maybe Seth Hernandez is going to be facing him.
I was thinking about them as a potential battery. So, and the league doesn't matter these days.
Well, it's, who knows what team, if you're a Padres prospect, I guess, yeah, I wouldn't get too attached to being in San Diego, but at the same time, man, I don't know. I don't see the Padres trading him.
Leo DeVries is going to be traded.
Getting traded.
I feel like if anything, Ethan Salas, I'm not predicting he'll get traded. I think he probably shouldn't be, but like, this is the exact sort of player that I'm sure the Padres are just like salivating about the value he has because he's so young at a premium position, showing power. Like all the teams who just heavily value the production with his youth combination at this level, I'm sure have astronomical values on him. If the Padres are like, hey, we can push the chips in more, you'd be able to get a big return for Ethan Salas at this point, I would imagine.
I'm sure he was coming up in trade conversations last year, and I'm sure there were some teams that said, no, we're not buying this. And now I'm sure they're thinking, oh, we messed up.
Right.
We should have jumped when we had the chance. But I mean, he's number 27 on our list right now. He is, man, well, all right. He's the top catching prospect in baseball, right? There's no catchers out of him.
Well, that's right. Okay, this is actually a fun one. I didn't even think I was going to bring this up at all, but let's say draft happens. Ethan Salas is continuing to be the exact player he is through the draft. Von Lackey gets signed. Who are you taking? Who do you think is the top catching prospect? Do you think Lackey has a top 25 case as soon as he signs? Would you rather take a guy like Salas? I'm not sure. There are probably some other interesting guys who are already in affiliated ball, already pro catchers who...
Joe Mack is the next guy behind him.
Rino Rodriguez for
Ethan Salas over all those guys. Yeah. And Rino Rodriguez. I like him with the Cardinals.
We have only... like, so Ike Irish is listed as a catcher currently for us. We probably need to update that. But I think we only have four. So Alfredo Duno with the Reds is at 82 on our list. He's the fourth. Nathan Flewelling with the Rays. Caden Bodine with the Rays, 5'6". Six catchers on our top 100. Feels a little bit light. I feel like the last few years we've had some good years for catching prospects. A lot of those guys have graduated, but yeah, top catching prospect in the game. And I was also going to ask too, so for Salas, because his pro career has been so unique and he still is so young, I mean, at what point would you think is a realistic timeline for him to debut if he continues to perform in Double A? He's only played 34 total games at that level. So I would imagine with this sort of profile, you'd want to get as much time as you possibly can, but it is the Padres. They're aggressive with players. Like, how much more seasoning do you think you need for him?
At some point this year, I imagine, well, he's got to stay healthy. He didn't do that last year, so that could interrupt his timetable potentially. But otherwise, I fully expect him to finish the year at the very least in AAA. And if the Padres are in the race, man, I don't know. I wouldn't put it past him to see him debut this year. I'm just like looking at their catching production this year. It's not great so far. But I, yeah, look, more likely 2027. I think you'll see him up at some point and taken over as their catcher of the future. That's also part of why I don't see him getting traded. One, I think the Padres are extremely high on him. Probably a lot of people are extremely high on Ethan Salas right now, but he also is very close to being big league ready at a position where he could step in and help them pretty quickly.
The Padres are 10th currently in team catcher war. So maybe not quite as bad as I was expecting it to be, but
the offensive production, I don't think is,
I think it's league average, but
is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least their WRC plus from Padres catchers is league average, which is 11th if you're just looking at all teams for their catcher. But anyways, maybe the Nationals can trade for him. They're 30.
I guess it's Campusano doing a lot of the heavy lifting there.
Yeah, or maybe, yeah, I don't know exactly. But at least the overall team production maybe not quite as bad as you would maybe think. Pretty good. Okay, who else should we touch on? You know, the one guy who jumped in, I'll add a name here who I think is intriguing. That's Josh Hammond with the Royals, who was, I guess technically a first round pick. He was there with the PPI selection they had last year after they took Sean Gamble with their first pick. We've got him sliding into the back of the 100 here at 94. And his just arc as a prospect has been super fascinating to follow because, again, we've talked about this a lot. And I think Royals fans are probably well aware of this, and draft fans in general are well aware of the fact that, like, after the summer leading into his senior year, I think most people would have looked at him as one of the better high school pitching prospects in his class. And then, like, having some conversations with scouts, it's like, hey, he's like a really good hitter as well, and he actually might prefer to hit. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. And then his entire spring, he just really performed at a high level. People continued to get more and more enamored with the hitting upside, the power that he brought to the table as a right-handed hitter, watching him at NHSI, I was like, at that point, probably fully locked in on like, okay, I'm bought in on him as a hitter. But I always was like a little, the reservation was, hey, it does feel like he's got some swing and miss. He doesn't have the most extensive hitting track record of this class. Like, what is the overall hit tool going to be? Because if he is able to hit, if he's able to make enough contact, limit the strikeout rate, I really think between the power he can provide, the defensive value he can provide at some sort of position on the left side of the infield, the arm that he has is an obvious asset wherever he's playing. And so far, we didn't get a debut from him in official games in 25 after signing, but I feel like it's been really encouraging to see what he's been doing so far. 284, 383, 461 in 27 games at Low A Columbia. He's got a couple home runs. He's got 10 doubles. And he's currently splitting time at shortstop and third base. Not sure exactly what the reviews are on his defense right now, but based on what he showed pre-draft, like, I think he has the tools to stick at one of those positions. What are your thoughts on Hammond?
Yeah, I said before, there's some similarities to Caleb Bonimer, which, I mean, now Caleb Bonimer is hitting about 800, it feels like 47 home runs already. So,
yeah.
But just that kind of right-handed hitting power bat with a knack for catching the ball out front, pulling the ball in the air for power, a lot of strength, a lot of bat speed, just really powerful.
His swing is beautiful to watch too. Like with Caleb Bonimer, I could see if you're like the aesthetics of the swing hold you back. It's unconventional how he kind of starts the swing, the pre-pitch rhythm in the box. But Josh Hammond has one of the prettier right-handed swings, actually. I know it's typically a lefty game to have an aesthetically pretty swing, but when Josh Hammond gets into one, it is great to watch. And yeah, he's absolutely hammering the ball.
It's very explosive, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that same sort of defensive mold of like, all right, big arm strength. Is it shortstop? Maybe more like a third baseman, more likely, but
yeah,
either spot you put him, that offensive profile fits really well.
Yeah, so hopefully we can see him continue to kind of keep the swing and miss in check, see if he can refine the swing decisions as he progresses. I think the plate discipline numbers that you're looking at is actually really encouraging for a player with his background. I don't know if I mentioned it, but it's 21.7% strikeout rate, 14.2% walk rate. It does look like he is maybe a touch more aggressive than you'd think with those numbers based on just like how often he's chasing out of the zone. But I'm very encouraged by what we're seeing. And I'm sure people who like to see players like this hitting the ball to the pull side with frequency also like the distribution of his batted balls, because to your point, he does get the bat head out and he does get the ball to the pull side with great frequency. So yeah, this is, I wouldn't say it's like the ideal outcome. I don't know if I had one in mind for him, but everything that you would want to see from Josh Hammond, if you liked this profile, I think he's showing you right now, which is cool.
Yeah. We also had quite a few Rays jumping up our list this time. Theo Gillen being one outfielder, jumps to number 36 overall. He's still their number one prospect. Nathan Flewelling, catcher, who's in high A and is also the reason why Caden Bodine, who's number 95, is a college player who's in our top 100, but is still in low A. Like, that's a tough one. Just, I'm sure the Rays are like, what do we even do here?
Right.
Oh no, we have too much catching. Nobody feels bad for them. And then Cooper Fleming too, from the draft last year, shortstop, was a second round pick, right? Or beyond that, maybe.
Cooper Fleming was a second round pick. Yeah. 53rd overall, signed for just under $2.3 million.
Yeah, he's been one of the hottest 2025 draft picks so far. We did move Brody Hopkins down because,
He's got strikes have been tough.
Great stuff. He can't be walking a batter per inning in AAA.
The Rays should lose their entire all the respect they get for pitchers throwing strikes. Brody Hopkins single-handedly ruining that reputation. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, he's walking, what do you say, a batter per inning, essentially. It's like a 19% walk rate.
They should bring Caden Bodine up to Durham, up to AAA.
Yes, let him frame those pitches up. Be ready to roll.
Cut his walk rate in half.
You know, we can touch on Theo Gillen because he's the top-ranked guy if you want, but I also think the kind of contrast of these catching profiles at the back are interesting as well. Just because, like, Nathan Flewelling and Caden Bodine are very different players, and I like both of them despite how dramatically different they are. Like Fluelling is this like power oriented backstop who I probably need to be more convinced on like what he's actually going to be as a catcher, as a defender behind the plate. Whereas with Bodine, it's like I have very few questions about his defense, unless we're about to start hearing from a lot of people who are like, you know, it's not quite what the expectations were coming out of college. But he makes a ton of contact, does not have a lot of power at all. And to your point, like it's hard for me to kind of update what I think about Caden Bodine at this point, because I don't feel like he's been put in a position where he's really challenged. Like I would expect a player with his skill set and college track record to perform at low A, but I also understand like you're trying to maximize the innings these guys are getting behind the plate. You want them all to get reps at catcher. So I certainly don't think he's going to be there all year, but
he might even, I mean, it's weird, right? Because if they had drafted Bodine first, he would not be in low A. Mm-hmm. I wonder if they just skip him up a level or skip him over a level. I should say. And I mean, maybe Fluelling has a case to get promoted soon too. So it's tough, but I mean, look, Caden Bodine, he's 22 years old right now. This guy was playing in Omaha before. He's hitting 402, 452, 647. He only has four strikeouts in 117 plate appearances. He's a great defensive catcher too. We have other 2025 college picks, right? Like mostly pitchers, but like, you know, Kate Anderson is in Double A, Jamie Arnold is in Double A. If they really wanted to jump him up to Double A, defensively, he could certainly handle it. And offensively, it's clearly Low A is not a challenge for him, so it'll be unconventional. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if that's something that they might consider doing, is just saying, hey, this guy's not getting challenged in low A. We need to do something.
Yeah. And I know people always talk about how, like, oh, catchers take longer, but, like, I don't really know how much more Caden needs to prove defensively. Again, unless, like, he's just been worse than he was in college. But I feel like of the catcher profiles, he would be a guy that I would think has the exact tool set and strengths where he could move much more quickly. But, I mean, Nathan Fluelling has been one of the most impressive young hitters in pro ball so far this year. I mean, he's been outstanding in all areas offensively. He's hitting .333, .421, .654 in 19 games at high A. He's got 23 games. I think it's at 19. 7 home runs in 23 games. I feel like the swing and miss has been in check. And really, his entire pro career, I feel like he's managed the strikeouts better than I would have expected given his background. I think his power was always really impressive and appealing as an amateur, and he's just been we're kind of seeing it turn into the batting average this year. I guess his first season in 25, we didn't see him put up an insane batting average. He was a productive hitter overall just with the on-base value and the pop, but now you're seeing more of that batting average. It's like a really well-rounded hitter right now.
Yeah, and even though he's a good, 2 or 3 years younger than Bodine, like he already has more power Bodine has.
Yes, no doubt.
Yeah.
Like whatever, at the time both these guys were drafted, Fluelling maybe had multiple grades better power.
Yeah, somebody or both of them has got to be getting a bump pretty soon.
Yeah, I would hope so. Okay. Do you want to circle back to Theo Gillen up top?
Yeah, he's been great.
He has been. He's been really good. In high A, 20 games, .265, .383, .618, 6 home runs in 20 games, like I said. Yeah, he's been good. Need him to stay healthy.
Yeah, staying healthy has got to be one of the keys for him. But wow, when he's on the field, it looks really good. We're seeing, obviously, a really good athlete, a guy who has a good understanding of the strike zone. It's not elite bat-to-ball skills, but very solid hitter and with power too. I mean, you look at the exit velocities, they look good. You look at the power game production this year. I mean, he has got 6 home runs in 20 games after hitting 5 home runs in 73 games a year ago. So that's taken up. So it just seems like a lot of arrows keep pointing up for Theo Gillen.
Is Theo Gillen, has he been more of an on-base and power hitter than you expected him to be coming out of the draft? Do you think that the strikeout rate is going to be something we're going to have to be concerned about as he moves up higher? You mentioned the contact rate's not being quite elite, but I think our perception of him at the draft was that he had a chance to be a plus hitter with solid power. Would you invert those tools at this point? Do you think he's going to be more power over hit? Or do you think it's just one of those guys who maybe has a solid blend of both?
I don't know. He's just, yeah, I think early when he was younger, I would have said, oh, like, good hitter, has a chance to grow into power. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing power, and it might be a little bit of each. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think either one is going to be like a 70 tool by any means, right. But just like a good, well-rounded player.
Yeah, we had him as 55, actually, both in high school. For whatever reason, I thought we had more hit than power, but we had him 55-55, plus runner, average defender, kind of questions about where he was going to fit defensively. Do you think that's an area of his game that will have limitations, like him defensively, or no?
I haven't seen enough of him defensively this year to have any sort of strong, confident opinion on that.
Right. Yeah, he's playing center field. He's played 16 of his 17 games in the field at center, one game at left, and then a couple at DH. So if he can stick in center field, this is a really appealing profile to me. I think with his arm, unless it's gotten significantly better than what it was in high school, maybe not going to be able to profile as like that prototype right fielder. But again, that like hit power combination center, if he's looking good there, would be a really, really great profile. I could see him being like a top 20 prospect in the game if he keeps performing.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that too.
Yeah. Okay, who else you got here?
We got Emil Morales with the Dodgers making a nice jump into our top 100, shortstop, number 67 overall prospect in the game. Obviously, it was a big international signing for them. Probably more third base than shortstop long term, but the swing and miss, he's kept in check. There's definitely power in there too. I think that's not that he was like a big raw power guy who like couldn't hit or anything mm-hmm. like that, but I think the power has definitely been the standout tool for him going back to when he signed, going back to when he was in, I mean, the DSL hitting 14 home runs in a 46 game season down there. So I think there's still some swing and miss that comes with the power, but overall, like, you know, I don't know, you compare him to Josh Hammond, for example, both top 100 guys, both guys who probably profile better at third base long term than shortstop, but I
both guys with some big arms too. Go Hammond over Morales, but they both have arms that are at least above average.
Yeah, some similarities to the profiles there.
Yeah, no, that's good. You said keeping the strikeouts in check important for him. Again, I guess you can ask this question kind of for all these guys, but would you expect that to be a limitation for him moving forward, or do you think he's shown enough already this year to have more confidence in just the quality of the hit tool and his contact rates overall?
I think he'll be able to keep it to a manageable level, but that is going to be the thing that we're going to have to watch the most. There's obviously power in there. Like, I like his swing. Just when you get to that level of strikeouts, it's kind of like right on the border of like, will mm-hmm. this work or what? It will right. not. And when you're in low A, facing low A pitching, it's, you know, you get an indication, but you get a much better test of it once guys are at the higher levels.
Yeah, how much does he swing, actually? I'm kind of curious about that. He's not been – his first year in the DSL, he swung above 50% of the time, and every year since then, I guess it's just 25, and so far in 26, it's been a much more typical range in terms of swings. I guess the concerns to the extent that I have him, because I'm not as brushed up on Morales as you are, like – what are the swing decisions going to look like as he faces more advanced competition? And like, are you going to get to a point where the strikeout rate climbs to that like 30% mark where it starts to get a little bit more worrisome? But so far he's been a really productive hitter every season. He's kept the strikeouts and walks in check enough. Another good young player to see performing well.
Yeah, I guess the opposite, and we can talk about some more college like pure hitters. AJ Ewing,
yeah,
the Mets,
another Ben Badler guy right there. Just gets
promoted to Triple A after being really good at Double A. Mm-hmm. He's not slowing down. I mean, between the two levels now, it was just for this season. I mean, 363, 478, 549. He's got more walks and strikeouts. It's only two home runs. So I think, look, that's a fair question of like how much power, how much impact is he ever going to deliver in terms of extra base damage? I don't think that's ever going to be much of a big part of his game. I think it's mm-hmm. more maybe 8 to 12, maybe 10 to 15 home run type range. If it ends right. up being 10, 15, I think you'd be really excited about that. And
right.
I don't know, maybe I end up being light. Maybe he like figures out a way to come into more power. I don't see that coming from him. Like there are other guys where, okay, they hit the ball harder than he does.
Or maybe you can see some strength gains more obviously coming.
Yeah, with Ewing, it would have to be, all right, he's going to get a lot. You'd have to expect him to get a lot stronger, more so than like changing something about his swing to like tap into some raw power that he has. I don't think the raw power that he has is anything right. special, but it's just a really advanced hitter, smooth left-handed swing, great ability to manipulate the bat head, good play coverage, good idea of the strike zone, and just guy just hits everywhere. He goes, I don't see that changing the next time he gets promoted either.
Yeah. I mean, really great understanding of the strike zone. His plate discipline has been impressive basically every single season he's been in pro ball. He has 247 total games in the minors, just 238 strikeouts and 157 walks. Basically, he's always walking at like a 15%. Sort of clip. It's 18.6% this year, just a 15.9% strikeout rate. So even if you don't have a guy who is going to hit for a ton of power, I feel like you're going to get a lot of consistency and like this high floor of offensive production between just the pure contact skills and ability to put the barrel on the ball, like you were mentioning, and just that floor of him taking walks. I mean, you could say that maybe that gets challenged as he faces major league pitching, but for a guy like Ewing, who has just consistently walked at a high level, no matter what the competition has been, I just think that is, at this point, I feel pretty confident that that's going to be a piece of his game that you can rely on. Good runner, pretty good defender. Like, again, outside of power, like he's going to be able to contribute in so many different ways. So, yeah, he's looked really good.
What about guys who are off the list? Who's exciting you? Who do you think is coming on next? I can tell you one who's maybe not, well, an organization mate of AJ Ewing, and that's Elian Pena. Mm-hmm. That's shortstop, obviously big international signing from a couple of years ago. They gave him $5 million. I mean, he was in the DSL last year, so they're skipping him over the complex league. He's mm-hmm. 18 years old. We'd be talking about him as a, you know, a high school senior, like a EJ Booth or Jacob Lombard, Tyler Spangler, Grady yeah. Emerson, all these guys for the upcoming draft. And here he is in low A, and right. he was great last year in the DSL after a kind of famous slow start the first 10 games of the season, but he finished mm-hmm. with I think it was more home runs than any 2025 signing in that league.
Yep.
OPS of 949, and now he's hitting 306, 411, 435. I mean, it's just he's another guy, just a very advanced, polished hitter, definitely not the athlete that AJ Ewing is or the kind mm-hmm. of runner that AJ Ewing is. I think more than likely he ends up sliding over to third base long term. But a guy who's just a very advanced hitter. The swing works really well. He's got a knack for making contact. I think there's going to be, you'll see him flash power now. And as he gets mm-hmm. even bigger, stronger, like he'll grow wide, right, more mm-hmm. than anything else, and I think that'll also push him over more
right
to third base. But somebody's just gonna be strong, physical, grow into power to go with the hitting ability
right.
that he has, and to do it the way he's doing it right now as an 18 year old in low A, to me, I don't think it's long before he enters the top 100.
Yeah, you've been pretty convincing to me when you were talking about Peña. If he was on the top 100 right now, I don't think that would be out of place. Another player that I think could make a ton of sense on the back of the 100 right now is Josh Adamczewski with the Brewers. What a tremendous sign for that organization. They've had so many of these guys. He was a 15th round pick in 2023, signed for just $250,000, a tick over $250,000, and he just hits. He makes a lot of contact. He walks a ton. Looks like he's another player who we're seeing kind of the power jump manifest itself this year. 21 years old in high A. He's hit 7 home runs in 22 games. He's hitting 301, 435, 616. He's one of these players who I feel like the more you dig into him, the more you watch him, there's just a lot of confidence that he is just a really advanced pure hitter who is going to hit for average, get on base, hit for power. I don't really know how much you're going to get from him defensively or what the profile ultimately is going to be with him, but I think he's just one of these hitters that I find myself more and more confident with, and he continues to prove it. He's continuing to level up his game this year. If you were maybe more skeptical of the power beforehand, I think he's showing that, like, you don't really need to be right now. So that is another one that I'm intrigued by right off the list.
Yeah, that was going to be another answer that I had too. Mm-hmm. He's just a really good hitter. They moved to, look, he was a second baseman before. He's played in a pinch. He's played some second base this year, mm-hmm. but he wasn't very good there. It didn't look pretty at second base. So they moved him, it seems like now, full time to left field. I was going to say maybe more of an opening for him getting to Milwaukee in the outfield, but also they have a pretty good outfield too. Mm-hmm. But even in left field as a full time left fielder, just the bat still profiles really well. Very mature hitter. It's a really sweet left handed swing. He's already got a career high now with 7 home runs. There's definitely power in there. Like when you see him unleash it and get off his A swing, mm-hmm. there's definitely power. It definitely fits the hitterish look that we're talking about,
right.
That we talk about a lot. I would also throw James Tibbs with the Dodgers in here. I think, is he going to be like a perennial all-star? No, I don't think that's likely going to be the outcome for him, but this was a guy who was, first round pick in 2024, coming out of Florida State, hit every year at a high level. I mean, freshman year, sophomore year, junior year when he got drafted, got off to a slow start after that, mm-hmm. in 2025 with them, got traded to the Red Sox, wasn't great there. And then it was like he got traded to the Dodgers and immediately it clicked, or whatever happened. The performance took off. He was great at the end of last year. He's been great this year. The swing and miss is still higher, but when you have these guys who are performing the way he is at the upper levels, there's only one more level that he has to go. Like, we have some interesting guys who are, mm-hmm. Who I like, who are maybe off the list or even at the back of the list, who are still in low A, who are going to hit a lot more bumps in the road before they get to the big leagues or as they make their way up different levels, the minor leagues. Whereas James Tibbs is only one level away. He's got big power, a swing and miss. I'm optimistic he can keep it to a manageable level.
I'm a little concerned about that one, but.
But I would have him, to me, he'd fit in the back of the top 100, just the performance, the power, the proximity to the big leagues.
I've got another one that I don't know if I'm convinced. I think he definitely fits here, but he's at least really interesting to me, and I want to see what you think. He's definitely not a player who's near the major leagues. He's one of these younger players who's just getting a taste of the lower minors, but Braylon Payne for the Brewers, outfielder, mm-hmm. first round pick in 2024. He has shown significantly more impact so far this year than I expected to see from him, especially this early. Like, how hard he's hitting the ball is kind of exceptional for his swing. It's a very unique swing that looks super unconventional and slappy at times, but when he gets his hands out and yanks a ball to the pole side, he really can hammer it. He's a great runner. I think very raw probably still and in both sides of his game defensively in center field. I think he has a chance to be a good defender just purely on the speed, but it sounds like he still needs some refinement and some reps there. And then offensively as well, I'm not entirely sold on like the pure hitting ability here, how much he's going to swing and miss, just swing decisions in general. But I'm intrigued by the power speed combination, I'll say, and his April was pretty loud with High A Wisconsin. What are your thoughts on Braylon Payne? Because I imagine he's probably going to be a very divisive prospect and player, but he certainly has really loud tools.
Yeah, one of the better power speed threats in that organization. We saw the raw power last year. It did not translate so much in games just because of the way his swing worked, because of his timing, the swing kind of gets disconnected, trouble recognizing spin. And now he hit 8 home runs in 78 games last year, and he's got 6 in 21 games this year. And obviously the slash line looks significantly improved. I'm very intrigued. It's also something where I want to see it for more than a month. So if he's hitting like this come July, yeah, I think he's a candidate to come into the top 100. He has that kind of raw talent. It's just a matter of can he make, and maybe he is currently making those adjustments, but there's enough questions there.
Yeah.
Offensively and defensively, certainly has the speed and athleticism to play center field. It's just a matter of just refining routes and instincts, stuff like that. But especially at the plate, is this real, or is it going to maybe revert more to what we saw last year? So very intrigued, very encouraged by what we're seeing, but do want to see him do it a little bit longer before jumping him higher up.
Cool. You have any other names you want to flag or mention here as we get near the end? I think those are kind of the ones for me, but if you got some more, throw them at us.
Yeah, that was good for me.
Okay, cool. All right, I think we're going to wrap for this episode of the show in that case. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for rating and reviewing the podcast. If you haven't, but you feel so inclined to rate and review the show, it's a great way to just spread awareness and get it out there to more people who might enjoy it. So thank you for that if you take the time. And just thanks for supporting Baseball America in general. We could not do this without you, as we always say. So really appreciate it. For Ben, I'm Carlos. We will see you guys next time. So long, everybody.
You're on a GLP-1. But now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. Get access to trusted experts, food plans that work with your body, and habit coaching to keep you on track. Plus access to GLP-1 medication. Get started at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
A warning from Jace Medical. Even if the war stops, the shortages won't. Because ships move slowly, the U.S. has been running on oil that set sail months ago. But that buffer is running out. Asia is already feeling it. Europe is feeling it. Africa is feeling it. Demand is increasing as supply tightens, and it's what's been raising your power bill and gas prices. But those last ships to the U.S. just arrived, and even if things stabilize, the ripple effects will last much, much longer, because oil doesn't just power your car. It powers the systems that make and deliver your medications, and when supply slows, shortages begin. The difference between panic and peace is preparation with Jace. The Jace case is a doctor-prescribed emergency supply of essential medications and prescription antibiotics delivered right to your door so you're ready before you need it. No waiting, no scrambling, just control. Get your Jace case today at jace.com.